Internet cookies. Love them or hate them, they are a big part of today's digital advertising landscape. But what happens when two massive corporations, Facebook and Apple, square off in this space? Brad Rizzo, who heads up our social media department, and strategic planner Pat Fayock talk about the battle between your privacy and advertising dollars.
So I guess, Brad, I'll throw the first question out to you. On a scale of Monty Python, how dead are cookies? Are they gray parrot dead, or are we talking Black Knight?
I would say Black Knight, because they kind of hung on for a little while after they should be dead. Yeah, I would say that from a social media perspective, we are getting a little bit of a head start on this with iOS 14 and some of the changes that are going to take place in April. But the loss of signals from Chrome sunsetting the cookie next year, I think, will compound some of these issues that we'll see on Facebook.
What do you see as the defining piece in your respective worlds here? Like, what is that motivator that's forcing them to change?
Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Sure. So, the motivator in my eyes is a couple twofold. One is self-regulatory and preemptively making large changes, whether it is, in the best interest truly of consumers, or it may be a little bit more performative in action, making it as though these organizations are in fact advocating for consumers, and these organizations are in fact pushing forward with privacy regulations versus safeguarding their own futures in an ecosystem where consumers frankly want to have more control of their own information and more control of the information that organizations are utilizing to engage with them.
And Brad, you're seeing that firsthand. I mean, we're seeing the real impetus here coming with the iOS changes, specifically how they're going to impact the social world. So, we see kind of the writing on the wall. We're watching these companies begin to steer to protect their interests. What is it like as it's actually starting to happen as you're preparing for this change in your specific side of the internet?
Well, from the social media perspective, it's going to be a big change, because we've relied really heavily on, for example, Facebook's first party audiences. And going forward, clients are going to need to rely more on their own first party data, because Facebook's own targeting capabilities are going to be weakened, because Facebook is one of those apps that tracks you everywhere you go, even when you leave the app. And they use that data to build up their targeting capabilities, to put you into even ever-changing audience buckets. If you're looking at healthcare, some of the audiences that Facebook allows us to use are really dynamic. They change very frequently. But with so many users potentially opting out, those audience buckets are going to be less powerful. And same with some of our sort of the most powerful tools we have with retargeting and lookalike audiences. We're getting ready for those to be smaller and less potent. From Facebook's perspective, they're kind of ticked off that they need to make these changes. Apple has really built a brand putting the user at the center of the experience, making the user the center of the iPhone experience, not the advertiser. And one of the studies that they quoted was from Pew that 80% of users say the privacy risks outweigh the benefits of sharing personal data with advertisers. And this is really going to prove this out, because when the iOS 14 changes happen, Facebook's going to be allowed to have a push notification on their app that asks if you want to be tracked or not. And I think most predictions we're hearing is that 20% of people will probably opt in to be tracked. However, we need to be prepared for more broad signal loss. Because in order to continue tracking some of these iOS users, Facebook has decided to treat all users as potential opt-out users. And it's going to weaken some of their main products that we rely on. The Audience Network is really where we get a lot of our most efficient CPMs. The Audience Network is a list of third-party websites. Facebook is so concerned that the Audience Network is going to be hurt by this change, they even considered sunsetting that whole product, which would drive up CPMs even on non-lower funnel campaigns. So I think the implications for Facebook are going to be pretty significant. We'll see if this is, and from Facebook's perspective, Apple is maybe not being totally forthright in that this is all about the consumer. And there will probably be some implications where more apps need to transition to being a paid app.
And so we've had this conversation on a number of different episodes now where, you know, subscriptions work to a certain point, but we can't pay for everything. And so there's a role for advertising to play to subsidize some of the content we consume. You know, the challenge we're seeing now is we have Apple, which has a business model that's built off the device sales, built off the network, the community, all the aspects that go from that user experience, not surprisingly, prioritizing user experience. And then we have Facebook and Google and other companies which have made money off of ad revenues and extending those ad revenues to help other publishers theoretically monetize their inventory as well. And so that creates a natural disruption. But you know, this isn't Apple firing the first shot. I think Google's already responded. So Pat, I guess from your standpoint, we're hearing 80% opt-out as a potential experience changer in the social space as iOS rolls in. What are you seeing from the Chrome side of things, from the larger internet environment? Are you expecting to see the same kind of effect across the entire ecosystem, or do you think that'll be concentrated within iOS?
I really think it would be concentrated specifically on iOS. The death of the cookie within the Chrome ecosystem, apparently in 2022 is when it's going to actually happen. We're not really anticipating too much loss of data fidelity and too much loss in trackability within Google, understanding brand exposure all the way to conversion, again, within that specific ecosystem of Chrome within Google. And really what's powering that is the Privacy Sandbox. So the Privacy Sandbox is a tool that is an amalgamation of all of the signals we're giving Google across all their platforms. So search, their video products, their email products, the taxonomy of that data, you know, in market for blank, these affinity segments, they're replacing the third-party segments that we've imported and activated upon within the Google ecosystem. So there will be a loss of attribution across platforms. But this move of eliminating the cookies within Chrome, frankly, will just make the Chrome platform and the Google platform across all products stronger.
So if anything, these changes stand to consolidate more ad dollars with the big players because, frankly, they have the infrastructure to support it. Listening to the presentations to Congress, and Mark Zuckerberg raised an interesting point yesterday about how when it comes to content moderation, which is, you know, a stone's throw away from ad revenues, only those people who can afford the infrastructure to moderate it should be able to play in this space. And so, again, we're talking about that economy of scale, and there's a certain advantage to the larger players there because, you know, you said a minute ago, Brad, Facebook's got a lot of first-party data on their users. Brands, in theory, are investing a lot more in their own first-party data. Third-party tracking isn't going away, but you're going to make this more associative, use the word segments. I think Google uses the word flocks in their sandbox, Pat. This associative relationship that this group of people that I know as a brand who I have a trust relationship with look or resemble like this specific characteristic within your walled garden. So going back to what you said a few minutes ago, Brad, the idea that Facebook has this large database of first-party data from all the interactions they've captured with their users, and going to what you had said, the Privacy Sandbox and Google side, Pat, it seems to me that we're not actually losing third-party targeting so much as we need to have our clients have brands invest in their own first-party data. And then they can use that data to essentially find common segments or flocks in the Google language to then engage. So is that your understanding as well, that as long as you've invested in that first-party data and you have something to match, to a degree, this kind of targeting is still going to be available?
Yes, I would agree with that. And social, I think, is a little bit ahead of some of the other channels as far as how often we use clients' first-party data to match with Facebook users. I think we have a lot of advertisers who are very comfortable with doing that. We'll just continue to segment those more often and create lookalikes off of clients' own data. However, for advertisers who do not have that robust access to CRM lists, I still think that there is a way to use Facebook's first-party data, but also some potential third-party vendors as well who can provide contextual targeting, behavioral targeting that we can use on Facebook. However, I think that the overall strategy may shift a little bit when advertising on Facebook if you don't have robust first-party data. I think we're going to see more campaigns with broader targeting. There was recently a study that was done where we looked at similar campaigns with similar geos and audiences, but one component we layered on very detailed first-party targeting, and the second component was more broad targeting within Facebook. And we're just seeing that the broad targeting is actually outperforming some of Facebook's detailed targeting. And you can use that broad targeting to come up with your own segments within the platform. Those are those, the retargeting, the lookalikes. And while those will be weaker potentially and smaller than before, I still think it's a way to come up with your own segments within the platform.
So to put that another way, I think one of the drawbacks from the targeting as we've deployed it is it gets incredibly niche, incredibly curated to have multiple different qualifiers kind of associated with it. Is it your understanding then, based off these changes, that you're targeting one specific qualifier, so that this person has visited your site and retargeting it, rather than putting all those data points on the user? You are looking at all of your users and then finding that one trait that they share or is likely to over-index. And it's again, it's broader, but it's still targeted.
Yes, I would agree. I think that's the approach moving forward. That yes, in general, we're seeing that adding in multiple layers of targeting into the same audience group, you're really just, you're getting to too small of an audience. And on top of that, we have a lot of advertisers who have very tight geos and specific markets that they're looking at. And the more layer targeting that you layer on top of these audiences, in addition to having geo, in addition to having age, in addition to having other demographic options on there, you're really limiting your reach and you're limiting your ability to find new people who may not be in the consumer demo that you think is the only one that you can advertise to.
So Pat, you're talking about a broader mix, and you mentioned before it's going to be harder to track across properties and things like that. So do you see this changing the audience-based buying that we normally see through programmatic to more contextually oriented or more ingrained sponsorships where you have a deeper presence with a PMP or a specific publisher? How do you see it shifting your buying practice?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say over the past 5 to 10 years, the fashion for media planning and buying has been utilizing software-based buying, these programmatic platforms, regardless of how you define programmatic platforms, whether it be Facebook or the Google Ads ecosystem or the Trade Desk. They are and will always be extraordinarily powerful and extraordinarily important tools within a marketer's toolbox. But these changes to the third-party ecosystem, third-party targeting ecosystem, is really changing the way that we'll be utilizing these specific tools. So with the departure and degradation of third-party cookies, the third-party marketplace is essentially going away. So we're going to be needing to utilize variant forms of targeting to get that right impression in front of the right person at the right time. So that could be through a private marketplace deal within a programmatic approach, working with a specific publisher, group of publishers, relying on those high quality contextual adjacencies. But then also something that we're starting to see, and a lot of our clients are asking about this, is how do we understand the new context of advertising? How do we understand the new what a new media plan looks like when we can rely on a very large publishing group to activate against an authenticated, logged-in audience? The scale might be quite a bit different. We're not blasting out impressions across the entire ecosystem in buying on an audience. We're buying more on context, kind of like how we bought advertising 15, 20 years ago, relying on a specific type of program or a specific type of content to get an audience versus buying an audience and not really caring where the content itself is appearing. So what we're really anticipating over the next couple of years is a really solid blend of platform-based buying, software-based buying, but then also relying on publishers that have been household names for generations, relying on their core data sets, second-party data from their first-party data, but activating upon it in a way where we can make sure that we're getting that right impression in front of the right person. But instead of audience, it would be more about the context.
And so again, much as you mentioned earlier with the larger tech companies, there's a first mover advantage here with these more legacy publications, legacy titles that have had this relationship, that have had the ability to collect data more and more often. I guess, you know, we're looking at putting the onus more on our clients, putting more onus on the brands themselves to kind of curate their own CRM, you had mentioned, Brad, or move into a CDP to better leverage the information across the organization. And then, you know, we can participate. But that's a sizable investment and easier said than done. We live in a world where we work with our clients on these executions, and it sounds great on paper, but connecting the pipes can be a challenge. So in the interim, do you see, Pat and Brad, more of our clients moving towards purely contextual targeting or using more, shall we say, publicly available data like location, things like that to fill in the gaps in the strategy? Or is it just use the data while it's there and we'll worry about it when we get closer to those deadlines?
One of the more untapped data sources that we've seen marketers be hesitant to utilize, but is readily available, is all the publicly available information from census, household income data from Bureau of Labor Statistics data, information that we can glean from publicly available sources.
No, I'm following you back. And I think that it's an interesting point that you raise. Like we have moved from targeting being part of the research portion of a plan long before the plan goes to market. We do our homework on who our target is, what do they consume, how do they behave, and then we'd run the media and see what happens. To in the last couple of years, like we're just going to run the media and optimize to what the signals tell us in real time. What I'm hearing from you and Brad, I'm wondering if you can add some context here, is that I assume Facebook, as much as these other platforms, will have tools, audience research tools, to help you understand what should work. You're welcome to kind of target those segments to build plans around that. It's more so the real-time exchange, the real-time targeting, the layering that's challenged. So are we just moving targeting up in the planning cycle to something that's more proactive rather than reactive?
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. I think while we can put the onus on the client to say, all right, send us your CRM list, your data, we'll go through it. There are things that we can do to help refine that audience from a social media standpoint as well before we get into planning. So it's moving audience development up a little bit in the process. And I think a lot of that will be a testing strategy post iOS 14 to not just re-benchmark all of the performance that we're seeing across campaigns, but also to take a look at what audiences are being impacted specifically by some of these changes. Another thing that we can do to help maintain the strength of retargeting and lookalike audiences is to help clients deal with the signal loss that might be occurring after iOS 14. That would include providing consulting on how they can consolidate tagging. Are they tracking the same form many different ways across their website? We can consolidate that into one tag that would ensure that we can track more things across Facebook, which would allow those retargeting audiences to be stronger. So I think it's a combination of updating how we develop audiences, a testing strategy on the impacts of iOS 14, and then preparing for signal loss.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that's been one of the drawbacks, especially from a targeting tracking standpoint, is we cookie bomb the website to track every activity. We shotgun approach our audiences to make sure we're not missing a signal that we can optimize to. And really, this change is about being a little more specific in our strategy, being a little more focused. And you know, that will slow us down, but it will also make us more iterative, and we can build on our learnings just as we always have. So I guess, you know, iOS is much closer in terms of going into effect than necessarily the 2022 drawdown on cookies with the Google side of things. But if you had to give one piece of advice for an advertiser looking to prepare for this new future, what are some things they could be doing now to put themselves in the best position for this transition?
I would say that create a testing strategy now. We're working with a number of advertisers to do that, to identify the exact elements that we really want to focus on in Q2, Q3, Q4 to make those benchmarks make sense for post iOS 14. I think there's a lot of technical steps that also need to happen on the Facebook side to be prepared for this. From pixeling, making sure that every domain has its own pixel rather than sharing pixels like we used to do, used to be a best practice. Well, I would say that Facebook is looking to have users stay in the app. Facebook has remarked in some recent sort of leaked information that they understand that they lost the battle for the device. If you remember a couple of years ago, Facebook had the Facebook phone, and they really thought that they were going to be integrated as a product within your daily life. Well, Google and Apple won the battle for the product, for the phone. So Facebook is now coming up with new ways to keep users in the app. And that includes their development of e-com in-app, Instagram cart, Facebook shops, really making it possible for users to convert in-app. And so if that's a possibility for advertisers who are in e-com to come up with a strategy to keep users in the app, I think that's a great way to start. But really, because of that, Facebook may become more of a, it's already a very powerful reach tool, but it may become even more of a upper funnel play if your only goal is to get users offsite and then track them on that location. I believe that Facebook is really understanding that they've sort of lost the war here on the device, and now they're coming up with new ways to keep people in app.
So obviously the incentives there for a full funnel approach within these platforms. Pat, knowing again that you have to touch more platforms, you're engaging with different tactics. How does this reflect in your role? What's the advice you would give to prepare for this new transition?
Yeah, something we're working with our clients on is really understanding what the past several years looked like from an engagement standpoint and coming up with media-specific benchmarks, but then also business-specific benchmarks. What did these platforms do these past several years to move a business along, whatever the goals are for a specific client's organization? It's going to take a lot of work to translate as an industry the past couple of years of engagement and media-specific delivery. So the diagnostic metrics, the clicks, the impressions, the cost pers. It's going to take some work to understand what the new normal is once all these shifts come into place. You know, the things that are going to be helping us to do that, to re-benchmark ourselves after all these changes take place, they're going to be media mix models. They're going to be analyses of how the disparate platforms are or are not working together. But a unified measurement of media, UMM, it's going to take a little bit of time to get there. And the missing piece to do that is really preparing for it by developing a CDP, developing a repository for a lot of this information now, regardless if a client feels like they might not have a lot of first-party information. It's setting ourselves up for success to tell a better story of what this new normal is once these changes go into effect. So there's a way to warehouse and a way to analyze how these platforms are or are not working together to move a client's business along.
From a Facebook perspective, one thing to keep in mind is that after the iOS 14 changes happen, Facebook will definitely come back with, as will Twitter, Snapchat, LinkedIn, Pinterest. I mean, this will affect all of those platforms to some extent, but Facebook the most. We're expecting to get additional guidance, additional best practices, additional technical developer guidance on ways to improve signal health post iOS 14. But one of the things that they've mentioned is this conversions API opportunity that we're going to share with some advertisers where you can connect your server directly with Facebook, which would allow the conversion data to be passed back to Facebook directly and not have Apple as sort of the middle person. And the reason that is a recommendation is because we don't necessarily expect conversions to happen at a lesser rate as much as we will have difficulty reporting and attributing conversions to your Facebook ad. So moving forward, we expect similar conversion rates, but we just won't be able to see that in the system. We won't be able to report on definitively that this Facebook ad drove this conversion. The conversions API is an opportunity to get around that and to have direct server contact. And so that's all to say that just for advertisers to keep in mind as they're looking at performance post iOS 14, that many conversions will still be happening that are happening now, but we just will not be able to track them as efficiently and effectively as before.
No, I think it's a really solid point. I mean, the conversions are still happening. And Pat mentioned a minute ago the idea of modeling coming into play, looking at maybe not direct attribution, right? But that we could still see these events happening in one data set. Just might be a little bit more work to connect it to what's happening in another. So that's where the investment comes in data science and data handling, which we've been making ground on. That's where the investment comes into CDP to better organize and access the data that you or the client can make available. And I think honestly, it comes down to, again, the subject matter expertise and the platform expertise, which, you know, Brad, your team is expert in the social space. We have the e-commerce team, which is building out our expertise in Amazon and the various e-commerce platforms. And Pat, your background going back through desk one in the programmatic space obviously gives you a leg up, not just in digital, but as we're looking at home and we're looking at video move increasingly more into this space. You know, the data will be there. It may just be a little more work to get access to it. So thank you both for your time joining us today. I'll mention that, Pat, you have a blog post going up shortly on this topic, add a little more color commentary to the conversation we're having here, and it will be a continuing theme for the rest of the year at the agency for sure. So again, thank you both for your time and good luck navigating the challenges ahead.
Thanks again to Brad and Pat for joining us. Media Impressions is hosted by Greg Ebeck and produced by Gwen Lufkin, Emily Wolf, Chelsea Fletcher, and me, Jared Rudenstein. Harmelin Media thanks you for listening to episode 6 of Media Impressions.